My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Everybody, welcome to a new episode. This is a fun one. It's a new question. Well, actually, I think maybe it's been answered once before, but still, when it's not as common, it's always exciting to kind of hear some cool thoughts and ideas and responses from our guests. So I hope you enjoy this episode. We have returning guests. Philip Summers is back on the show, and he answers the question about what game have you gotten competitive with? So something that, you know, maybe you, you know, that dug in deep and made you get, you know, feisty to, you know, kind of fight, scratch and claw your way to victory. And, you know, what about it made you get competitive? So fun conversation with Phil. You can hear that after the break. For now, I've got just the standard business as usual. I've been putting a lot of work into the 32-bit library book, the Greatest Hits volume. So I'm really, like, the goal is to still have that out by the end of this year. So I'm making a lot of progress there. So that's great. I have that next batch of retro game zines. The next three issues are in, well, actually, they're no longer even in production. They're being shipped to me now. So those should be arriving to my house here any day, at which point I then begin the big shipping process and sending them all out to the Kickstarter backers, and then they'll be released monthly for anybody else who missed those. The latest issue being the Final Fantasy Mystic Quest issue. You can pick that up now at pixelsandpolygons.net. You can buy it digitally on Patreon at patreon.com/DarrenHupke/shop. The links for all that stuff's in the show notes as well. Yeah, some fun stuff with Retro Game Zine, some really great contributors. I'm really excited about the these upcoming issues. The Jammer Lammy issue, so these zines, you know, were meant to be like 28, 30 page like things, like fun single issue, like deep dives and stuff, or single game deep dives. The Jammer Lammy issue ended up blowing up to about 10 more pages, so a significant boost in content there. Mike Scholars, the writer of the Parappa the Rapper book from Boss Fight Books, was the contributor for that upcoming issue, and he wrote just a ton of stuff and didn't really stick to the target word count goal. And you know what? I don't care. It came out super awesome, and it's essentially a bonus chapter to the book if you want to view it that way. I even changed the formatting for the zine to be more of like a book format. And if you've read his book, you know it's amazing, but like the footnotes and like his brand of humor and informing, it's fully recreated within the zine. So hopefully it's just kind of continuing on and being more of a continued read if you enjoyed what he did previously there. And if you haven't, go buy that now. The Boss Fight Books book, I mean, nearly all of them I've read have been just great reads, like super informing, but also with so much personality from like the writers and like the background they're bringing from and drawing from as they're writing about these games and the histories of these games. They're super well done. So plugging not just my stuff, but Boss Fight Books again. Really love what they do and what they got going on. Oh, they've actually got I think when this issue's out, their Kickstarter should still be running, but they're doing a next wave of books and a Kickstarter for those books. So you should jump on that and back that. I already have myself. And yeah, it's well worth it. What else we got going on? The zine, 30-bit library podcast. Yeah. Oh, and then Beat 'em Up. Beat 'em Up is out in early August. It's up to, if you missed any chance to get it from like the Kickstarter or anything like that at all, it's actually on pixelsandpolygons.net to pre-order. So you can still get that in. As soon as I ship out all those copies to Kickstarter backers, then it's just in normal release and it'll be available for everyone to purchase. But you can pre-order that through the website and get that shipped to you after all the other ones get sent out, which will be like early August. But you can see that on pixelsandpolygons.net and do that then. So, yeah, a lot of stuff. And that's, I think, all of it. So thanks for listening to the business stuff. Thanks for your support. If you are looking for ways that you can support me without having to spend any money, because maybe you don't have it, or I'm just not that good, but you still like listening to this podcast, leave a review for the podcast. Whatever platform you're listening to it on, some type of, you know, like or star rating or whatever it is that they use. Drop me a line, drop me a message, like say something nice about it if you've been enjoying it. Maybe even answer a question, like answer a show question, you know, like what's an average game or below average game you love that doesn't get enough attention, and just maybe share one of those. If you do and I read it, I'll read it on a future episode or something coming up. Do something fun, some community readbacks or something. But that's it. This is a long rambling intro. Thank you so much for participating in listening along. We have an ad break, and then the main episode begins right after that with Philip Summers. We'll catch you again next week. Bye.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I've got a returning guest, I can say now. We have Phil Summers from Hand Drawn Game Guides back again on the show. Hello again, Phil.
Hello, Darren. Thank you for having me back.
I changed it up. I mixed it up with people and called you Phil instead of Philip. Yep. And now it sounds like we've been talking for weeks, but we're recording this minutes after the first episode, y'all, and you already know that. I always say that. But thanks for doing this again. It's been a fun chat with new folks. And I think, like, you know, doing this podcast, like, I don't have enough people in my real life orbit that like talk about video games or want to talk about video games the same way that I do. So that's part of the reason why I even started doing this podcast. But now meeting like a bunch of new and interesting folks who are, you know, doing their own cool projects and their own cool things in video games is just, you know, made it even more rewarding to do. So chatting with folks like you is the reason I'm doing it. So thanks for joining and being a part of it.
Well, thank you for having me. I kind of hear you with the game stuff. I mean, there's plenty of people in real life that I can definitely talk games with, but I definitely have a very specific, you know, track, and not many people are on that one with me. So
it's, you know, I like video games are great. I mean, they're like big or small, like they can get you entertained for just like a quick burst of 30 minutes, or they can like you know, just pour into you and make you think about them for weeks, you know, like a really good book or movie, you know. And like, yeah, they're just special and they're interactive, you know, like that's what makes them stand out and everything. It's, you're not just passively like watching or reading something, you know, but like having some skill and challenge along the way sometimes, you know, makes it just, you know, special enough. And games are cool.
Oh yeah,
breaking news, video games are fun. But so we talked about it on the last episode, but you do the hand-drawn game guides. You've talked about like doing some like previous, like, you know, NES like favorites and everything. Is there a game or a project that you've always wanted to like tackle or do that you've like either saved for a rainy day, or, you know, you didn't know the right angle to take, but is there like another like hand-drawn game guide that you'd want to do in the future that you just haven't
haven't tackled yet?
Yeah, I'd love to do something Castlevania, whether that's two or, well, any of them. I would love to do any of the Castlevanias. But for the third one, I've always had this idea of like a choose your own adventure. So, you know, because you pick the different, you know, you get your different characters along the way. And I just think it would be kind of fun to be like, oh, you got Grant and that, and, you know, you flip the page, whatever. I thought that would be kind of a fun concept to explore with that one. Who knows? You never know. Maybe that day could come, because I could, the idea what I'm doing with Mega Man, I had this idea forever ago when I was started. I was like, I would love to make Mega Man where it's like you're kind of flipping through like you know, Dr. Light's notes or something, and it just looks like a lot of skim, and I didn't quite do that with this, but that's kind of where it's headed. So,
oh, that's cool. Yeah, I had this idea for I wanted to do a book on I kind of started it, and you know, but a Final Fight book related to it. But like my initial idea was like to challenge myself with writing, like not just like a documentary style or like a nonfiction style, but like an in-world item. What if it was like a case folder or like you found like a detective's like information sheet, and as you flip through it was like, you know, fake pages that look like they, you know, paperclip a photo, and that would have been like the screenshot from the game, and then interviews with people. And I started to actually put it together in that way, and you know, did like a fake interview with somebody, a wrestler from Saturday Night Slam Masters, you know, and as if they were talking about Hagar and like the events that happened in the first game and everything, like retroactively. And I just thought it would be kind of a neat thing to like, hey, this will still tell the history and tell the story of the game and kind of give you like details about it, but do it in like this like fun, like, you know, in-world quote unquote way of doing it. But after about, I don't know, a couple weeks of kind of putting that together and all that stuff, like the itch to me more just like, you know, look into the actual development history and like the real world development. And I was like, yeah, you know what? Like maybe I just go this angle, and then, you know, other things happened, and that's even on pause too. But that's neither here nor there. You know, making stuff's, you know, challenging in different ways sometimes, and you know, it's always fun.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great idea.
Yeah. And I like part of me wanted to even have like actual paper clips or even try and print like fake looking postcards on like, you know, like prints and all that stuff so that you can like, I can bind them to it. But I was like, man, that would be like a lot of work to like, you know, if I was like try and sell that to people, like I'd have to go in there personally and like paperclip each of the same items to each of the same pages and all that stuff. I mean, it would look probably really cool, but it would just be like a huge undertaking. So that was part of what scared me off a little bit from doing it.
Oh yeah.
But maybe one day I'll do something like that.
Yeah. There's, you know of it. There's Forgotten Worlds. The other design, it's a great little design, and the I think it's the second issue. I think it's awesome. But when as soon as I saw it, I just thought this had to be a nightmare. There's like a piece of duct tape on the bottom of it, and I'm certain it was also written on. And it's just like it's such a small thing, kind of like what you said, where it's like paperclip. And I think I messaged the writer of it, and he wrote back like, yeah, that took forever. Like, and I totally get it, but like, I appreciated it. I thought it was so cool. Like, this is such a cool, like, personal touch. Like, I know this person sat there, tore off this piece of tape, taped it onto the thing. Like, I think that stuff's awesome.
It's, you know, you got to love what you're doing to want to do that. Yeah. I always wanted to ask him about that, actually. Yeah. We chat every now and then. I've written a couple articles for his website, you know, just randomly. Okay, yeah. I found the website and I was like, this is cool. Like, you know, I'd like to write something like this. And I just sent him an email and he's like, yeah, sure. Go ahead, write something and I'll put it up. And, cool. So I've got like two or three articles up there, but, I was always curious to know, like under that tape, was it like, what was the reason for it? Was it like a typo? Was there a problem or whatever? Or was it more of just straight up designer-y, you know, like a conscious choice like that? So,
That was what I took, that it was just kind of like something cool. Something a little extra, you know, give it a little identity, a little personality.
Yeah, shout outs to Forgotten Worlds, cool zine that you can buy. He's out of Australia, so sometimes shipping can be, you know, a little bit awkward, but it's worth it just to have these fun like passion projects and zines and all that stuff in your hands. So a huge recommendation for me there if y'all want to check something that's not by Phil or me, but Forgotten Worlds is by somebody else entirely that you should check out.
Yeah, very cool.
All right, let's do a couple this or that's in the icebreaker then. You,
sure.
Ready for that? All right.
Yeah.
Handheld or TV?
TV.
Okay. Let's do, oh, this is always an easy one. Pixels or polygons?
I don't know. Maybe pixels.
Yeah, and nothing beats like really nice pixel art.
Yeah, and if I had to make like a choice, like what kind of games am I going to play for the rest of my life? I'm probably picking like 8-bit, 16-bit games. You know.
Yeah.
So I'd probably go.
Oh, so you're going? I mean, I assumed you were going pixels. Then, yeah. I mean, you were still deciding.
No,
sorry.
No. I think I said it. I think I said pixels. I'm just complaining. Sorry.
Ninja Gaiden or Shinobi?
Ninja Gaiden. Although I do love Shinobi as well.
I thought I have this on here, but if not, run and gun or beat 'em up?
Running gun.
Okay. And I guess digital or physical?
Physical.
Physical. There's a convenience in digital, but I guess it doesn't there, beat you having know, something tacked on.
I was. Do you mind if I like go sidetrack here a little bit?
Do it. Do it.
Yeah, like I was definitely completely against digital for a very long time, and then yeah, you're right. There is like a convenience to it, and the other thing too, like with the new consoles, I'm finding is like you're just downloading the whole game anyway, or there's updates, and it's just like whatever. So like I bought Expedition 33, which is incredible. I'm almost finished it, but I'm like, I'm on the final boss. It's so hard. I stink, but it's so good. I wanted to buy. I was going to buy it physical. The day it came out, I just said, I'm going to get this. So, like, I didn't pre-order it or anything. I just looked. I saw my local GameStop had a copy of it. But things were kind of happening throughout the day, and I had to do stuff at night, and I was just like, I can't get out there to get this game. I want to play this game. So I just went on. As I was thinking this, I just went on the PlayStation website, and I just purchased it and bought it that way. And then, you know, when I went to go play the game, it was already there. So, like, you know, there is definitely a convenience in that. Sometimes, and I do love the game so much where I'm like, I kind of do wish I had the physical. But, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of, it is what it is. If this stuff's going to be, you know, if it's going digital, it's going digital. And I've made my peace with it.
Yeah, I mean, part of it to me is I understand people's fight for like the preservationist side of it. And like, you know, they want to be able to like have it. And like, you know, if, mm-hmm. you know, the day the internet's unplugged or like these systems or services are gone, like, yeah, we absolutely will not have access to these digital libraries. But to me, it's like even with the physical games, like I often like, you know, growing up, you know, I would sell games, I'd trade them into game stores, you know, go to GameStop. So I'd get rid of them and everything. And I don't have all of my collection. So, like, which kind of sucks. I mean, you know, best case, you know, I would have ever been able to keep every game I've ever had, you know, that would have been optimal. But, yeah, to me, even my physical library has come and gone, you know, over time. And the way I treat like the digital purchases, like will one day like these be inaccessible, like, or will a company change its policies, or will something happen where I won't have access to it? Like maybe, but is the money I'm spending on it and the entertainment I'm getting out of it, is that enough in that moment or in that, like, you know, few weeks span that I'm playing it? Like, if that's enough for me, like, cool. Like, then I am mentally okay with the idea that I may not have access to that again in the future. I'm basically paying for like the chance to play it, you know, in that moment. Yeah. And that's probably enough for me. Like, as much as I would love the idea of being able to go back and playing some of my favorite games, I only have so much time, you know, in the world, and there's always new games coming out. So If I can't play, you know, that game on the PS3 that I loved, you know, in 10 years, like, there, I'll likely have found like another game to fill that void with to play like later on anyway. And, you know, no disservice to anybody who wants to have like a cool, like, physical collection and everything. I mean, I would obviously, like, I'm not saying eliminate physical games or anything either. I would love for them to be able to do both. So both types of people can have the way they want to do it. It's just eventually I just hit this spot where I realized, like, you know what? I don't have to put clothes on. I don't have to drive anywhere. I don't have to do anything at all. I can just hit download and have it here right now. And like, yeah, you know what? The convenience is kind of outweighing my need to kind of go out in the world and all that stuff at this point.
Yep. No, I agree. And the mind switch too, that you touched on with like, and I hate to use this word, they're like consumable, you know, it's like, I'm buying this thing. I know I'm going to use this thing, hopefully for a decent amount of time. And then it kind of, and the way, even like, especially PS5, cause I don't have like a hard drive attached to it or whatever, like you can hold like 5 games on that thing. So I'm already also in the mindset of I'm deleting this game. Like, it's gone now. And I know I can download it again whenever I want, but like, to your point, like, maybe I won't be able to download that game another time. You know what I mean? Like, so it does kind of suck. I don't, you know, but yeah, as long as I got my entertainment out of it. And to your other point too, like, you know, there's so many games, there's always something different. And also, there's so many remasters now. The chance, like the game you want to play, it's probably going to come out again. That's, you know what I mean? Like, it'll be released. Don't worry. It's coming back.
Yeah, so I will have some type of, like, collection of it that I can replay it again later on if I don't have access to the original one, you know?
Yep. All right. Sorry to start.
No, that's fine. That's fine. It's, you know, that's the point of it. It's just the show. It's just to have a conversation. So, you know, that's all good. All right. I asked the question, you know? So, you know, it came up. Here's a fun icebreaker question. So it's kind of two parts, but the first part's easy. This part, you just think about something and tell me this. But what is one of your favorite games or favorite game franchises, just off the top of your head?
Let's go Super Mario.
Super Mario. Okay. Now give it a new title, and you can't use either the word Super or Mario in it.
Ultra Luigi Siblings. How about that?
Yeah, okay, that does it. That does it. You're the marketing guy in charge of it, and you can't just use the old title. Ultra Luigi Siblings. Yep. I would play that game still.
There you go.
But it would still be fun. What are your thoughts on this is a tangent too. The Koopa Kids. So Mario 3, yeah. Koopa Kids. Why do you think they're like kind of written out, or like been like, you know, they were gone for so long? And I think they've now started to show back up, like in Mario Kart 8. I think they were back in that. But
yeah, they've been around.
But like canon-wise, they're not actually his kids anymore. It's just Bowser Jr. is the child, and these are just orphans he oversaw for a while. Like, what is your understanding of the Koopa Kids from Mario 3?
So my understanding is that, yeah, I mean, they were definitely billed as his kids. Now, I think, look, I'm not like some, I love Mario, but I'm not like a master of Mario lore. And I don't even really know. I know it doesn't go as deep as like Sonic lore and stuff, which is beyond me. But anyway, my understanding is that maybe in Japan, they were never explicitly called his kids. So that may have been like a U.S. thing. Mm. That's my understanding. I could be wrong about that.
No, actually, I do think I remember reading something about that too, actually, now that I'm thinking about that.
Yeah. So, like, they were never his kids. They're just minions, and they're just Koopas. So I think that's the explanation. But, yeah, I like Bowser Jr. At this point, he's been around for so long, he's been accepted. But I feel like there was a lot of hate for him. I always kind of enjoyed him, but I did miss the Koopa Kids, and I'm glad they're back, even if they're not his kids.
Yeah. I mean, I never hated Bowser Jr. at all, but I just love the design. Like, in Mario 3, like, it's one of my favorite games of all time. And I loved all the different, you know, every world had, you know, a funky boss, and they were all, like, unique with personality. Like, even the artwork for them was always so rad, and they were all so different.
Oh, yeah. Yep, I love them.
Yeah. Cool. Well, then that's that. Let's jump into the main question then of the episode.
Sure.
You selected this. I'm curious to see, and you even asked a clarifying question about this as well, so I'm curious to see where this goes. But what game have you gotten competitive with? You know, tell us about it.
All right, so we're going to stick with Mario here a little bit. Mario Kart Wii is the one I wanted to pick here, because I've played it pretty consistently since it's been out. And I feel like, I don't know, I was thinking through it. I was like, I can't think of any other game that I've played this long, with, you know, with other people, not just like myself. And that's the one that's had the staying power. And I love all the other Mario Karts since then, but Wii is the one, man. That's like, I love it. So the way, how it came up was, you know, the game came out, I definitely played it with, you know, my family or whatever, and it kind of went away for a little bit. And then in probably like 2009, 2008, when did it come out? Maybe it was even a little later, probably 2009, 2010. Yeah, because it was actually around when my daughters were born. So let's say around then. And like, the game had been out for a little while. But I got a new job, and at that job, they had a Wii, and a couple of the guys there played Mario Kart. They played Mario Kart Wii. And I didn't know what I was in for when they asked me, probably like my second day there, you want to play, you know, are you into this game? Do you want to play? I was like, yeah, sure, absolutely. And I thought I was going to smoke these guys. You know, I was a little smug. And these guys were animals. They were out of control. And it was a blast. And I definitely stepped my game up. And we were like, we all should have been fired, honestly. So it started out that like we would play at the end. We were allowed to play at the end of the day. And we would do one Grand Prix. So it was like about 15 minutes. And that's how we would wrap up our day. And then it slowly started to turn into, all right, we're going to do two at the end of the day. Now we're at a half hour. And then, like, as we were getting more and more competitive, we're like, you know what? Let's do a lunch sesh. That's what we called it. We're going to do our lunch sesh. And then we also, and then eventually, at our all time worst, it was as soon as we got into the office, we'd do one at lunch at the end of the day. And we acted like I don't understand how this place tolerated us. Maybe because like there was a fair amount of us that played. It wasn't just four of us. We had like, you know, we would rotate people if people lost or whatever. And we were just completely out of control with this game. And we played it nonstop for, I mean, I'm going to say 2 to 3 years nonstop. And then like, because I was so into it, I got my family kind of back into it. So even after I left that job and we stopped playing, then I was playing with like my nephews, my brother and like my brother-in-law, and like my dad started to play. And, you know, in the beginning I just completely obliterated them in that game, but you know, they caught up. So they're all pretty good now. And yeah, we've been playing it pretty consistently ever since. Just love that game. I love how broken it is. I love how cheap it is. Like, the things that people hate about that game is what I'm there for it. I love it. I love that, like, a race can start, especially, I think, Dry Dry Desert. Like I say, I play it all the time. I always forget the names of these tracks or whatever. But there's the one desert course where, I mean, you can... Oh, and we play with, you know, we play on the hardest difficulty level. Items set to frantic and all that. Like, aggressive CPUs. And the one race, you can literally just sit at the starting line. You can let everybody lap you. And just because of how like broken the items are, you can literally take first place after that. And you can just do all sorts of ridiculous stuff like that. You can definitely be like mean. Like if you get a big mushroom, you can go in reverse and just annihilate somebody just for the heck of it. And then you can just zip right back up and you can catch right back up. We've tried all these things in new Mario Karts. You can't do them. If you try to do anything silly like that, you're punished and you're going to lose the race. But in that one, you can definitely be a complete maniac and there is nothing like it.
Yeah, so that's one of the best-selling games of all time. I want to say, I'm like pulling it up right here. Whatever, in total, 37 million copies. I feel like it sold more than that. And that's up there. Yeah, I put a lot of time in that. And I was going to ask, you know, if there are techniques and tips, like, you know, that you have as an expert of it, you know, but it is like you can't just gun it and just try and hold first and be first the entire race. Like, you know, it is about that item roulette and like, you know, when you get like, you know, those important ones, those key ones, or at least getting one while you're back in the pack and kind of like saving that for like that right moment when you make that final push to help. But like there is a strategy to it as broken as it is, like it's broken that way for everybody. So if everybody is playing with the same skill set, like, you know, it just makes it its own type of like racing competition that isn't a traditional racing competition about, hey, I'm going to be the fastest or I'm going to be in first the longest and I'll win. Like, it's not how it works.
Yep. The way you can combo up certain items too, it's like, you know, I got my star. I'm going to hang on to that thing and I'm going to kind of stay back here in 10th place. And then I'm going to ride up on the boxes. And as soon as I'm going to hit them, I hit my star. Maybe I'll string that along right into another star, right into a bullet. And then you're right back in first and you've like annihilated the whole track. Like stuff like that is just... it's crazy. And then like the feeling when you're doing it, it's so good. Like
I thought I was good at Mario Kart and Mario Kart DS when that first launched, like it had like an online mode and everything. And I was like, all right, you know, let's take it online. Let's go. And then I started going and playing against somebody and they were like snaking back and forth with like boosts. And I was like, oh no, like I'm never going to be able to do that. Like, and I was like, okay, maybe that's a one-off. And then I just started up another race. And then, like, everybody in the race was doing that except me. And I'm like, oh, like, I'm just never going to play Mario Kart online, apparently. Like, this is just, like, I want to actually play the game, not, like, break the game, like, even like that, you know?
Yeah. So, like, it was fun for 3 days, and then everybody figured out how to snake, and I was like, this is stupid. And I was getting good at snaking too, but I was like, this is, to me, it wasn't fun. Like, I'm just, you know?
Yeah. It's just, it broke it in a way that was not, like, fun. Like, it wasn't like I was figuring out how to do it and solve that, like, aspect of it to keep it competitive. It was, like, min-maxing to, like, the worst of, like, you have to do this in order to, like, kind of keep up and everything and not necessarily be able to play the game the rest of the way you want to play it. But, The, who's your go-to racer?
Peach in the Mach Bike. Is the one, and I've gotten everybody that plays pretty regularly. We pick different characters, but we've all kind of settled on the Mach Bike. That seems to be the one because you can just turn, like, it's not the fastest bike, but you can maneuver and you can really, like, throw some things off. And you can, you know, if you got a whole bunch of bananas in front of you, like, you can weave through them pretty quick. You can make some crazy tight turns. Like, I know I've watched people play online, or I've watched, you know, there, I know there's, like, a dedicated group of people that, you know, they still play it online, even though it's not on, but they all pick Funky Kong, I think, in the Flame Runner. And they're playing it in a different way. They're definitely playing it in the, we want to get to the end the fastest, where we're, as in one way I'm playing it with people, it's about who can we crush the hardest. And so it's a very different feel than the people that are playing with, like, the you know, Flame Runner and just trying to gun it with Funky Kong.
Yeah, and then I guess last question then. I'm assuming you did not use the motion controls when it got competitive. You're using standard controls. Yeah.
No way. Yeah. I, you know, when a game came out, I did it for fun a little bit, especially because you were kind of fresh off of, like, Excite. Did you like Excite Truck?
I was not a big Excite Truck fan. I mean, I don't think it's a bad game or anything. It just did not, like, catch me, unfortunately.
Okay. So I really enjoyed that, and I had fun with, like, because that, you could only play motion control with that one. So, like, I kind of tried to do that with Mario Kart in the beginning, and because it came with the wheel. But you don't, it doesn't, there's no benefit to using it. Like, in Excite Truck, like, you're not only are you just, you know, tilting back and forth, but you're also rolling the controller to kind of, like, tilt your tree. So you're, you know, you're doing stuff that's kind of unique with that control scheme. And that was not the case of Mario Kart. So I did try it, but not anymore.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's it too. We did it again. That's the episode.
Great.
We talked about our competitive nature there with Mario Kart Wii. That's a fun story, though. Thanks for sharing that, Phil.
Yeah, no problem.
Again, I've got the links in the show notes for, like, your social media stuff, and then I'll put the Kickstarter to the hand-drawn game guides in there as well. So if anybody wants to get a pre-order in there, do so. Check that out. It is super rad. But anything else you want to share before we wrap the episode then?
No, I mean, if you want, you can follow me on, different social media sites, Blue Sky, Twitter, Instagram. They're all at Hey Phil Summers, and that's it.
Okay. Well, Phil, thanks a lot. It was a fun conversation. Yeah. That Mario Kart memory is just flooding back to me. I was a manager at a GameStop at that time. I was, you know, a little over 20, maybe about 20, 21. Yep. And I was just selling those things like crazy. Like those days where the phone was going off. Do you have a Wii? Do you have Mario Kart? And people would just come on in and just, it was selling like crazy with that plastic controller or the plastic steering wheel and everything bundle.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, not working there. It wasn't awesome, but it was awesome to be around the excitement, but being the GameStop guy making close to minimum wage, you know, not being treated fairly, but hey,
I get it. I worked at, I know you're trying to wrap up, but I worked at retail for like about 5 years, KB Toys. So I was there for the launch of Dreamcast and PS2, Xbox game, all those Game Boy Advance stuff. So like, as much as retail can be, you know, not great, definitely some fun memories when those things are rolling out and you know, the excitement's happening. It is fun.
Yeah, being able to cut open that box and see that game, you know, like right before launch and everything, like, oh yeah, this is me seeing this. And I abused my privileges a little bit. I would let my staff, ended up being the store manager, but like before street date, I would let people like open the box and take just the disc home, you know, keep the box there. So like if we had a count, quote unquote, count the inventory, like, yep, here it is. There's the case. This is here.
Nice.
And, whenever my 360s would get a red ring and die, which unfortunately happened quite a few times, I would literally just take it into my work, swap it out with a different one, and send that one other one back defective, and like I wouldn't have to pay anything. And like, yeah, it's abusing the system, but like I needed my 360. So yeah, what am I gonna do?
All right, well, Phil,
yeah, you got to take the perks while you can, you know, like just like playing a quick game of Mario Kart at the start of work, at lunch break, at the end of work, and you know, hours later, you're being paid for Mario Kart time. You know, you got to take the perks where you can.
Yep.
Phil, I hopefully we can maybe come back and do this again. I'll you know, you have that list of my questions, but in the future, if I ever want to come back in, you got an open invite. It's always fun to talk video games. So if you ever do, reach out, let me know. We'll love to stay in contact.
All right. Great. Well, thank you again.
Yeah. You have a good one.
All right. You too.
Hello. We are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai Captain Dangerous Parker and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.